Good morning and welcome to the Morning Review for Wednesday, June 6, 2007. I'm Gabriel Gutierrez. And
I'm Yareli Arizmendi.
And this morning, actually, we're going to be having a very, very interesting and very dynamic discussion as well. As I had mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about the Cuban Five. And on this show, we've had opportunity to discuss the theme somewhat, but there are several different developments that are going on, and among other things, there's the birthday of two members of the group that again has come to be known as the Cuban Five, and we're going to be using the occasion to talk a little bit about not only the case, but really to try and get an idea of who these people are.
Who these people are, because, you know, as I was saying this morning, and I think that our audience members are probably feeling the same way, is like, who are these Cuban Five? What, you know, I sort of heard about it a long time ago. Was it 2001? You know, and we need to review that this case is not done, and it's not, you know, fairness and justice has not come to it, and to really review what the case you know, entails, and not just the details of the particular case, but what that means for other issues going on.
Absolutely.
Just, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, the international attention that it's drawn, mm-hmm. The implications that it has, because especially along the lines of this war on terrorism.
That's right.
You know, these five men were actually engaged in that, you know, in anti-terrorist actions, and the tables were turned. And
it's interesting how we don't think about that, right? We're in the war on terror, we always think that we are the victims. You know, the United States is the victims that and terror against us. But, you know, these were people that were actually engaged in seeking the terrorists against their Cuban,
right,
you know, republic. And they're accused of terrorism themselves for trying to protect themselves. So
right.
It's kind of a crux of definitions there that's going to get interesting.
Yeah, you know, and I think the discussions, what they do is they help to shed light on really the need for a critical media literacy, you know, in terms of how we as consumers of information come to read the information that we're
exactly.
getting, yeah, that we're essentially receiving. And you know, it applies, I think, across the board to a variety of different topics. But in this particular case, or these particular cases, you know, mm-hmm. it also opens up for a discussion of, well, what is Cuba like? You know, I mean, even among progressive folks, you get mm-hmm. The idea that they're you know, that's fed through the mass media for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult at times to filter
it's
that.
It's kind
you know?
Of the most you can do is resist it. You mm-hmm. know, the information that you're getting is like, there's got to be more to that story. I'm not going to just take it as I'm being fed, you know, the news in the mainstream media. But
right.
you don't know what to substitute it with, or to, you know, you need more information, more tools to make like a more complex reading of it. And it's hard to get it.
Sure.
That's why maybe KPFK comes in to help you.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully so.
Yeah. You know, and I want to make a point, too. You know, I went, what was it, several years ago as part of an academic sort of exchange in mm-hmm. conference to Cuba. And prior to going, I didn't know what to expect. And mm-hmm. a lot of what you get fed here, you know, I consider myself to try and read between the lines, but I actually expected there to be a very heavily armed presence of Cuban soldiers walking the streets when I went down there. And
oh, wow.
to my surprise, there was nothing there.
No.
You know, I mean, in fact, didn't even see police officers at that time. It was back in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see very much of a law enforcement presence. And the other thing was that in my experience with the exchanges that I had and interactions with people, it was a very, you know, a very intellectually driven,
absolutely,
you know, folks, you know, that told me a lot about myself and what my situation was over here.
It's quite incredible that anybody on the street is so educated, you know, and so aware of the rest of the world. We have this kind of vision that gets fed to us that, you know, they're isolated, locked, and not allowed to learn about anything else that goes in the world so that they can, you know, just feed them what the government wants them to know. And as you talk to them, they're so informed about what's going on in every place of the world that you feel like, who's the ignoramus here, you know? Right. And it's kind of you, because in the U.S., it's very easy to isolate yourself as, like, we live in the most important, powerful country in the world, and why do we need to know about the little guys, you know? Right. And Cuba is just amazing. That, you know, what one thing that got me when I went to Cuba was there's no advertisement. Mm-hmm. On the streets. I mean, there's no, like, big billboards or loud things in the radio and all of that. And all of a sudden, I started to realize how much time, mental time, it takes to be reading all these ads all over the place.
Right.
Because, you know, if you don't have that noise, you all of a sudden, everybody's like a composer. They're singing, they're dancing, they're writing poetry. They're, you know, I mean, it's so creative. It's really, creativity just, you know, flows on the streets.
Right.
You know, in that sense, just on a daily.
Yeah. And I think, you know, no society is without, you know, issues or themes or problems.
Absolutely.
Or whatever you want to call it. And certainly don't want to move beyond that. But I think, you know, whatever those were, it was hard to see, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because like you're saying, just looking at the fact that it's a very clean place. You know, you don't have packaging anywhere, throwing out, you know, people are very courteous. And you know, it really brings to question the sign when I flew in that one time. I believe it was a Jose Marti quote that said, Patria es humanidad. You know, our homeland is humanity. And looking at that, not really knowing what to make of it. And then as I spent, you know, the few days that I was there, coming to the realization, this is what that meant.
Yeah.
And, you know, really how powerful that is to be able to engage in sort of this love for humanity, this, you know, amor propio, this dignified way of living that I don't know, you know. I mean, in spite of all whatever the material conditions or whatever by our standards here are, you know, I think that it was refreshing to be able to see that.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, how we're all out on our own here. Everybody takes care of themselves by themselves. And in Cuba, everybody takes care of each other because you've got to, you know, you don't have like your own TV, your own this, your own, you know, your own. It's a communal kind of effort. And I think that is a little bit what it means, you know, for Patria es humanidad. It's like, let me remind you that we're in this world together. You know, and that together we can get more things done, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're going to be, we're very lucky, actually, on this occasion, as I said earlier, the birthdays of two members of the Cuban Five happen to be this week. And we're going to be joined the entire hour by Gloria La Riva, who is coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Five here in the U.S. And we're also going to be joined by Elizabeth Palmeiro, who is the wife of Ramon Labanino, who is one of the five from Cuba. And really looking forward to that discussion. So be sure to stay tuned. Don't touch that dial, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to the Morning Review. I'm Gabriel Gutierrez.
And I'm Yareli Arizmendi, joining you as co-host.
As our new co-host, right. And over on the other side of the glass, we're joined by Jocelyn Arroyo, producing the show. And so very, very good to have you. Yeah, you can barely hear. But no, very good to have you both on. As we were saying in the introduction, very much looking forward to it. And, you know, to get on with the part of the show that we've been anticipating, the Cuban Five are five Cuban men in U.S. prisons whose supporters say were unjustly convicted of false charges in Miami in 2001. The five were accused by the U.S. government of conspiring to commit espionage on the U.S., among other charges, in spite of the claim that the five were only there to monitor the actions of Miami-based terrorist groups in order to stop terrorist attacks on Cuba. This week, Family and supporters celebrate the birthdays of Gerardo Hernandez, who was born June 4th, 1965, and Ramon Labaniño, who was born June 9th, 1963. And we're joined this morning by Gloria Larriva, who is coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Five, and Elizabeth Palmeiro, the wife of Ramon Labaniño, to discuss their plight. Gloria and Elizabeth, very good morning to you, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth.
Hola, Elizabeth.
Hola. Hola, Gloria. Muy buenos días. If we can start, Gloria, with you. First of all, again, welcome back to the program. But please tell our listeners who might not be familiar with the case of the Cuban Five what this case entails.
Well, the five are political prisoners in U.S. prisons scattered across the United States. As you said, they were arrested in September 1998 by the FBI and charged with 26 federal counts, ranging from conspiracy to commit espionage to conspiracy to commit murder to failure to register as foreign agents, when in fact these five men never harmed anybody in their mission. They were infiltrated into terrorist organizations in Miami. This is something that most people in the U.S. know nothing about, the fact that the CIA, the U.S. government, had financed terrorist organizations in Miami to wage war against Cuba. And the Cuban Five were infiltrated in those groups to protect Cuban and American lives from terrorism. But the men were arrested in 98. They were put on trial in the one city that they could never receive a fair trial, Miami, and they were convicted on all counts. They were sentenced in the year 2001, three of them to life, including the two men whose birthdays we're celebrating this week, Gerardo Hernandez and Ramon Labaniño. And since then, the five men have been in U.S. prison. There's an international campaign for their freedom by hundreds of organizations around the world. There have been, for example, over 100 parliamentarians from the British Parliament signing, calling for their freedom. The United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detentions has ruled, five judges in that case, that the men were detained illegally, that they were denied the right to a fair trial, and has called on the U.S. government to remedy the situation. Interestingly, 2 years ago, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in the District of in Atlanta ruled that the Cuban Five were denied a fair trial by the fact that it was held in Miami and overturned all their convictions. In that 93-page decision in August 2005, the 11th Circuit Court said that because of the history of terrorism in Miami, because of the prosecution's misconduct in the trial, and because the venue was an improper place, being Miami, they said that the five needed to have a new trial. However, unfortunately, because of the intervention of Alberto Gonzalez, who everybody knows is the U.S. Attorney General, the U.S. government appealed that victory of the five, and last August, exactly 1 year later, the full panel of the 11th Circuit reinstated the convictions. And that's where we stand today. There are new appeals awaiting the five, and in August, we return to Atlanta for the latest of oral arguments in the case of the five. As I said, there's a worldwide movement for them, and people from Cuba, especially the Cuban people, but everywhere, including in the United States, we are determined to keep fighting until these men, anti-terrorist heroes, are freed.
And Elizabeth, Gloria just defined really what's happening internationally. What does the case mean for Cubans in Cuba and in terms of a series of different recent historically anyway, relations with the United States? How has it been addressed and received over there?
Well, good morning, and thank you for inviting me to talk to the audience of this program. Well, the five here in Cuba are considered as heroes because they left behind many things. They left behind all their precious dreams to go there to Miami, to the United States, to infiltrate those terrorist groups that Gloria talked about. Here in Cuba, the Cuban people is very well informed about what were they doing there in Miami, and the Cuban people is in the first line trying to make the world to know about the situation of them and trying to get aware everybody about the necessity of Cuba to defend against terrorist attack.
And now, from what we hear, mostly it's about the case and about the case. Elizabeth, you are the wife of Ramon Labanino. Can you tell us a little bit about who he is and what he's like? I mean, as a father, as a husband, as a person prior to having left Cuba.
Yes, Ramon Labanino is my husband, as you said. We have two daughters, and he has another one, the older one, Lily. My two daughters are Laura and Lisbeth. They are 14 now and 10 years old. We live here in Havana. We married back in 1990. On June the 2nd, we get 17 years of marriage. Ramon is a wonderful person. He's serving a life sentence in Beaumont plus 18 years. For us, it's not an easy situation. We have been away one from each other for many years in this difficult situation of a prison. For us, it's really a sad experience to go there to visit him since the visa is delayed every year. And in some cases, like in Gerardo and René, their wives had never received visas to go to visit them there. In the case of Ramon, he's okay. He's graduated from economy in the University of Havana. He's doing okay in the prison, even though the precarious conditions there. He's treated as a common criminal. He's not considered as a political prisoner. He's surrounded by dangerous people, criminals, murderers. And, of course, I feel afraid from him here in Cuba. But his optimism and his awareness that he's doing what is right, he didn't do anything wrong to anybody, he didn't cause any harm to anybody, it made him feel strong and optimistic about the victorious end of this situation, because at the end we will stay together again here in Cuba. As a result of the solidarity campaign, as a result of the support of everybody in the world, the goodwill people, and mainly from the people from the United States, the people that is now misinformed about what is happening to these five men, but we are sure that once the American people get aware about what were they doing there, they will support this cause the same way they support the cause of Elian at the time when he was kidnapped there in Miami.
No, I was just going to say that it's appalling to find out what Gloria was saying about the U.S. government appealing the decision of the Atlanta, the 11th Circuit Court. You know, headed by Alberto González, this appeal, you know, our upstanding citizen and leader, and I say that ironically, obviously, it is very angering. And one thing that Elizabeth mentioned, you know, how you said, Elizabeth, that he left dreams and, you know, his life in Cuba to go to Miami. Usually we hear the opposite in, you know, from the perspective of the United States, we're always thinking that the dream is to go to Miami. And in this case, these were heroes that were actually safeguarding their country, you know, by going to Miami and exercising their right to defend, you know, their country from terrorist attack. And a terrorist attack that is, you know, by now it's very well documented that parts of the U.S. government support, you know, action right against Cuba. So this is, I hope that our audience is benefiting from all this information, because I certainly did not, you know about it
right.
in this context.
Yeah, you know, and then within that context, you know, my question would be to Elizabeth as well. You said you haven't had an opportunity to visit Ramon in some time. When on occasions that you have had an opportunity to visit, have your daughters been able to visit him as well? And if so, what has that experience been like?
Well, we had the opportunity to visit Ramon for more or less once a year because, you know, the visa is a very complicated process, and the visa has been used to cause more suffering to this situation. We have the right to visit him almost every month, but in fact we only visit him once a year, me and my two daughters, and Ramon's daughters too. The situation is that last time we went to see him was last year, in June precisely. We have been without seeing each other for 1 year, and we don't know when we are going to see him again, since I have my next date for the interview in the intersection here in Havana in September. We ask for the visa as any common person here in Cuba who wants to visit any relative there in the United States. But in our case, we are asking for a visa for a humanitarian situation, since they are in prison, since they cannot come to visit us, we have to go there to see them in prison. It's very difficult for my daughters to see Ramon in prison. For instance, Lisbeth, the younger one, she met Ramon there in Beaumont 5 years ago in 2002 when we went there for the first time to see him, the whole family together. For her, it was really difficult. I have spent, since she was 1 year old that Ramon was arrested in Miami, I have spent all these years talking to my daughters about Ramon, showing them how Ramon is, how Ramon behaves, how Ramon loves them, and everything he will do in case he will be there here in Cuba with us. Once they met Ramon there in prison, we feel like a dream come reality, because we spent more about 4 years without seeing each other. And now we spent almost 1 year without seeing him, but Ramon is always with us here in Cuba, because in our house, his spirit and his way of being is always here, but it doesn't substitute him, because we need him, my daughters need him, and even the Cuban people need these five heroes to show them how important it is to be firm and to be in the right position when you have to. My daughters, they don't know when they are going to see their father again, because when we ask for the visa, we have to wait about 3-4 months for the answer. But at least we have this opportunity someday. But we always think about the cases of Adriana and Olga, the wives of Rene and Gerardo. Gerardo is in prison there in California, and maybe he's hearing us now. And for him and for Rene, it is more difficult, because they have been for more than 7 years without seeing their wives. And there are two daughters too, Rene and Olga. They have two daughters that have been suffering from this situation like me.
And why, Elizabeth, why are they denied visas to see their husbands?
In the case of Olga and Adriana, they have been changing the reasons for the denial of the visa. They started from saying that they were a menace to the American security, then they accused them of being terrorists, and every time they ask for a visa, they change their reason. Can you imagine? Seven times they changed it. Okay. Last time they said to Adriana that she was a probable immigrant, an illegal immigrant, and they said to Olguita that they recommend her not to ask for a visa anymore, because they won't change their mind, never. So there is no real reason. They are just trying to push René, trying to push Gerardo, trying to awake them, trying to cause them more suffering in this situation of a prison where the most elementary right to be visited by their relatives has been denied for many years.
Okay, and does it have anything to do with, they are in different states? You mentioned Olga's husband is in California?
No, Adriana's husband is in California. René is in Florida, in Mariana.
Okay.
Yes. I want to emphasize
they were spread out throughout the United States. They are in five mm-hmm. different prisons. Fernando is in Wisconsin. Antonio is in Colorado. René is in Florida, Gerardo is in California, and my husband is in Texas, in Beaumont.
Okay.
Even though they belong to the same cause, they belong to the same case, they are spread in five different prisons in mm-hmm. the United States, making it more difficult for
exactly.
them, for their lawyers, for us, taking into account that once we get the visa to go to visit them, we have to go along. Because the people from the consular section in Washington, they are not allowed to go with us to those different places to help us during the time we are
sure.
there to visit them for only 1 month.
And that in itself is a strategy to
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Now, Gloria, you were going to interject a point?
Yes, as Elizabeth has stated very well, the two wives who were denied visits.
Gloria, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you speak up just
a
little bit, please? Thank you.
Just to emphasize what Elizabeth was saying, the two wives who were denied visits to see their husbands, Adriana Perez, whose husband Gerardo Hernandez is in Victorville, close to Los Angeles, she has not seen him in 9 years.
Wow.
And they're very... You know, they long to have a family. They long to have children. They long to just be together, to see each other. And the U.S. government knows very well that these women are upstanding citizens in their country. They have no intention of staying in the United States. They simply want to be with their husbands. This is purely punitive treatment, punishment of the men.
Mm-hmm.
And Olga Salanueva and René González, who is in Mariana prison, they have a daughter who is U.S. born. She was 4 months old when the five were arrested. She was born in Miami when the family was living, when René González's family was living in Miami with him. And because René González would not turn against the other brothers before trial, the FBI used his refusal to collaborate with the FBI against the five. And they punished the family by deporting Olga Salanueva to Cuba. And this is why it's really a political case. The men are political prisoners. The U.S. wants to punish the men for having defended Cuba.
Of course.
And that's why right now the terrorists who the five were monitoring in Miami, their mission was to monitor the terrorists, to keep them from carrying out terrorist acts against Cuba, which has killed 3,400 Cuban people, because of their defense of Cuba, the U.S. government is punishing them in. You can visit our website, freethefive.org, and five is spelled out, freethefive.org, to find out how to help in a campaign for the women's or the wives' right to see their families, and also for the right of the families to see their husbands and their fathers and brothers much more frequently. But that's Free the Five. There are things that people can do to help in this.
Right, and I would like to reiterate that, as we do with every show, we'll be putting that information, that link up on our link at kpfk.org as well, for listeners who might not be able to write that down at this moment. So definitely we'll have that contact information for you. And now, the case... again, you know, we hear a lot about the legal specifics of the case, and not too long ago there was a book titled "Letters of Love and Hope: The Story of the Cuban Five," that was published by Ocean Press and includes an introduction by Alice Walker. Gloria, can you maybe briefly introduce what that book is about?
Yes, you have a copy of it, right?
Right, I do.
It would be great because your sound is better if you could read something from it. This is a book that was published of some correspondence between the men and their wives, their daughters, their mothers, and they're extremely touching. Just to open a page of the book and read how they write to their families and their families write to them, touches the heart. And it was, as you said, prefaced by an introduction of Alice Walker. It's very, very beautiful.
You know, and having read the book, it's both letters and, well, not both, I should say, letters, poetry, drawings, and it's written in a way that, or it's put together in a way that reflects letters that are going back and forth. And let me, if I could, read this one letter that was written by Gerardo Hernandez, titled Letter for My Unborn Children, which was written on February 3rd, 2001. My dear children, by the time you read these lines, a number of years will have passed since they were written, hopefully not too many. At the time of this writing, you've not yet been born, and your mother even has doubts about whether you ever will be. All this is because I'm living some difficult times in my life, far from my country and my family, of whom I am so proud, as I hope you will be someday too. This is a drawing I've done for many children, sons, daughters, nephews, nieces, and other relatives of people who are here with me today. People who have added their words of love to the drawings and then sent them to their loved ones who are also very far away. This is why I wanted to keep this drawing for you, so that one day, after you come into this world and have learned to read, you can understand why your father is not as young as many of your friends' fathers. So you will know about the many years your mother and father had to live apart, even though they loved each other so much. Years that perhaps one day I'll tell you more about. I love you very much, Dad.
Wow. You know, that human spirit that, in spite of the circumstances, will seek a way of communicating and permanecer, you know, and that's just beautiful.
You know, and having not only read this, but read about this letter, because apparently it was a part of a diary of another contribution as well. And something that Gerardo said that really struck me, where he's talking about other prisoners requesting that he draw the same drawing that he had drawn for their children, and they're offering him all these different material things that they have access to in prison, you know, whatever it might be, you know, cigarettes, food, or whatever. And he says no. He says something to the effect, all I want is to know whether the children liked it.
Wow.
You know, the thing about these men is they're highly regarded by the other prisoners. The state refuses to recognize them as political prisoners, but they're recognized as hero inside the prison, and they give much assistance to the other people. The thing about Gerardo is that he has double life on outrageous charges, outrageous convictions. And it's punishment because he was the leader of the group in this anti-terrorist mission. And yet, some of you may be aware that there is a terrorist, Luis Posada Carriles, who's receiving some news now. And this man, Posada Carriles, bombed a Cuban airliner 31 years ago in which 73 people died. Posada Carriles has just been freed in Miami. The U.S. government, Alberto Gonzalez, the one who's punishing the five, refuses to declare Posada Carriles a terrorist, which is required to keep Posada Carriles in jail, behind bars, and yet the five are in prison for saving lives. This is U.S. policy. This is U.S. policy against Cuba. And why? We're very appreciative that Pacifica Radio has given tremendous coverage to the five case because it involves the whole issue of Cuba's right to be free, of Cuba's right to defend itself, and why we urge when people hear about this case to please Get involved in it. Learn more about it. You can get, again, the information at freethefive.org. But Gerardo Hernandez has double life, and they want to drive home that sentence by saying, you can't see your wife. And you see this beautiful, very touching letter from him to his unborn children.
You know, I paused when I read it initially. You know, I was reading through the book, and they're all very moving letters. And really, again, going back to at the beginning of the show, during the introduction, I talked a little bit about this sign at the airport, Patria es Humanidad. And you know, I didn't really know what humanity really meant. I mean, I saw it in the dictionary. I saw it in books. But I didn't really know what it really meant until I saw it firsthand on such a grand scale when I arrived at one time again in Havana and again being reintroduced to that here. And I don't know, I guess it's really difficult to understand or to explain.
But it is that, you know, what you say that Gerardo, in his letter, and what you were saying, that his payment was, did they like it?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't, don't give me food or cigarettes or whatever. That is humanity. You know what I mean? It's that invisible thing that it's hard to define. It's what unites us. What that love. And Cuba is, I think that one of the reasons it's such a strong experience to actually go there and experience what is a country on humanity as its spirit, you know, feel like, look like, how is that different from, you know, landing in Los Angeles with kind of all of our loud advertising, super slick highways, et cetera, et cetera. You know, how does it differ when love is at work on the streets, love between people to people? And to tell you the truth, I mean, Cuba is fantastic, and I thank the Cubanos, you know, for showing us that spirit. And this book is filled with it. I was in near tears as you were reading it, and as Gloria was explaining how I assume, Gloria, you mean double life, like they sentenced him to double life?
Has a life sentence. Well, three of them have a life sentence for conspiracy to commit espionage, and the key word is conspiracy.
Right.
There was
right.
never espionage nor any intent, and you don't have to prove even any crime to convict someone of conspiracy. The other charge against Gerardo is takes a long time to explain, but basically, to give a little background, in 1996, early 96, a terrorist organization, Brothers to the Rescue, was invading Cuban airspace, flying right over Havana with planes, and Cuba kept protesting this was a danger to the people. The Cubans knew that Brothers to the Rescue was at some point planning to drop bombs from the planes,
right.
But in any way, they were menacing the island, and Cuba warned Brothers to the Rescue, stop flying. They protested to the U.S. government. The U.S. government did nothing to stop the flights. And finally, in February 1996, two of the Brothers to the Rescue planes were shot down after a repeated warning.
Mm-hmm.
And because the five were monitoring Brothers to the Rescue inside Miami, the U.S. charged Gerardo with conspiracy to commit murder. Why? Because they said in the court that he deliberately planned for the planes to be shot down in international waters. The U.S. claims that they were shot in international waters. The long and short of it is, Gerardo had nothing to do with the shoot-down. The shoot-down itself was a legitimate act of self-defense
of
by
self-defense.
The Cuban government. And yet he was charged with something that even the prosecution, during the trial, complained to the judge that they had no... They would not be able to convict, and yet he was convicted because it was a Miami jury.
Right.
Because it was a jury that was willing to accept all the hysterical arguments of the prosecution. And that is one charge, the count three, the conspiracy to commit murder. Again, as I said, there was no murder committed. It was an act of self-defense. Gerardo had nothing to do with it. But in the appeals coming up, this will be a key part of the appeals. And we're hopeful that not only that charge, but all the charges will be removed. And yet the political struggle is what will determine the legal outcome.
You know what?
Popular support.
What is outrageous is this doublespeak, this, you know, we use terms as convenient. I mean, because terrorism means one thing when it's on us, but when it's on others, it's you know, we kind of adapt it and use it to for our own interests. The case of Luis Posada Carriles is outrageous. You know, he should be the poster boy of terrorism. You know what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, we're letting him go free? It makes no sense. And somebody like Gerardo, with this, kind of technical language thing of conspiracy that, as you say, you don't have to prove. It's just, you know, we know that he was thinking about it, and that's enough to give him life in prison. These things should outrage us, I think, you know, because it is really not fair. Like Cuba is trying to defend itself. As anybody would. It would be ridiculous to not try to defend yourself, and all of a sudden we're outraged because it's against our interests that they defend themselves, which is not even against our interests, really.
Yes, and to show the outrageous double standard, the contrary positions, yesterday the same U.S. attorney in Miami, Alejandro Acosta, the one who is currently prosecuting the five, pushing for them to remain in prison, fighting against the appeals, Alejandro Acosta filed a motion in April to request the reduction in sentence to almost be freed of the two terrorists who brought Posada Carriles into Miami, snuck him in by boat 2 years ago, Posada Carriles being the terrorist who bombed the Cuban airliner.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. attorney who is prosecuting the five is asking for the freedom of two terrorists who had massive amounts of weapons in Miami. Now, this is a lot of information for people. You can see all of this information on the website, Free the Five. But also, I want to give a little promotion here. Gerardo Hernandez is an amazing cartoonist. He's a caricaturist who has many of his drawings, cartoons, ironic humor on the website. You can see it under the culture section.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, very well. If I can, before we move on, I want to read another excerpt. It's a poem from Ramon Lavanino, entitled "To My Daughters." Mm-hmm. I gave you life. I sprinkled your love with dew, glorified your soul in mine, and grew from your challenges. My life turned into three my wishes and destinies. Three, my grateful happiness. Three, my plans and fortunes. For you, I would exist, wherever I am and reside. As all my love goes only to you, I exist only in you. I may be far away today, and so can't share your joys, but know that wherever I am, I love you all. Wherever I am, it's for you I live.
Oh, gosh. Ay, you know that.
Elizabeth,
yes,
tell
I'm
us
here.
What has been the exchange in terms of how your daughters have been receiving not only the information, but the communication between Ramon and them and you, in light of the inability really to be able to see him physically?
Well, it has been very difficult all these years, but we keep on fighting, trying to have our family together. Ramon sent them poems, letters, beautiful letters, saying them about how to behave, about the school, talking to them about how he was when he was a child, trying to get more in conspiracy with them about being a good girl and a good child. I don't know if you understand. Sometimes
yes.
he behaved as a little boy too, trying to understand their mind, since Ramon has spent a lot of time without them and without seeing him, the way they are growing, the way they are learning how to read and write. So it's very beautiful to see the way they talk for instance, by phone, yesterday Ramon called here to our house, and Laura, the older one, she didn't want me to hear what she was talking with her dad because it was a secret between them. Ramon then explained me that she wanted me to know a boy that she likes, that he's a friend, and she preferred to tell him about that first than me. So you can imagine the way he is connected with his two daughters, even though we have been for many years away one from the others. We are fighting against this distance that keep us apart, and the letters and poems and the phone are very important for us, since we cannot go to the prison every time we have the right. But that's the way to keep our life in the best mood we can.
And you know, the introduction by Alice Walker to the book, again, Letters of Love and Hope, the story of the Cuban Five, really addresses that as well. And you can read that throughout the book, and it's reflected, that idea of the duty. You know, you have one of the five, I don't remember which one specifically, but even involved in the writings of drawing a picture and putting chores that the children should be doing as well, you know, and certainly never having lost that connection, which I think, wow, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we're running towards the end of the program, and I wanted to also, first of all, thank you once again for both of you, Gloria and Elizabeth. But before we go, I wanted to get both of your take on Fidel Castro's appearance on television yesterday. What significance does that have, do you think? Gloria, if we can start with you.
Yes, Fidel was on TV yesterday on the Round Table, which is a nightly talk show in Cuba, after the first time in 10 months, and he appeared stronger. Even the U.S. press declares that he looked strong and he was animated. He spoke about the issue of Vietnam. The head of the Vietnamese Communist Party has been visiting Cuba, and I think it'd be good if Elizabeth talked about it because she was there watching the show.
Yes, for us it was a wonderful experience to see Fidel again after more than 10 months without seeing him, talking for more than 1 hour, I think, he was on television. He looked very well. He was animated, optimistic, very well informed about everything. He talked to us about the recent visit of the General Secretary of the Communist Party of Vietnam, and he informed the Cuban people about his health. He's doing okay. Anything out of common. For me, it was a very happy hour to see him again. And I hope he will be soon in the front line of this campaign to free the five again, because we know he is also very, very well informed about everything we are doing to make justice in this case. So I want to know that here in Cuba, everybody was in front of the television watching Fidel, and I know that everybody is now happy for the health situation he had.
Very well. And Gloria, we're just about out of time.
Can I end with a couple of sentences that Ramon said when he was sentenced? When the five men were sentenced, they gave these amazing speeches of their commitment to the people.
Right.
And he said, when he was sentenced, he said, "If preventing the death of innocent human beings, defending our two countries from terrorism, and preventing a senseless invasion of Cuba is the reason I'm being sentenced today, then let that sentence be welcomed. I will wear the prison uniform with the same honor and pride with which a soldier wears his most prized insignia. This has been a political trial, therefore we are political prisoners." And I know that Adriana Perez will be interviewed soon by your station to talk about Gerardo Hernandez.
Right.
And hope people can be listening to that.
Very well. And
very,
so
very strong words. Beautiful. You know, that is a soldier with commitment, the knowing exactly why they're fighting.
Very well. And Gloria and Elizabeth, thank you very, very much for having joined us this morning and spent the hour with us.
Gracias.
And one thing that I do have to say, volverán.
Yes.
That'll do it. That will do it for this edition of the Morning Review. I'd like to thank Gloria Larriva and Elizabeth Palmeiro for having joined us this morning.